Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. So the time has come again, yes, to vote, certainly, but for the fourth November in a row, healthcare.gov is open for business again. That's the portal through which millions of Floridians buy health insurance. This is the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. But there's a good chance if you get health insurance through your job or your spouse's job, now's also the time you're looking through possible changes for next year. Like mangoes, snowbirds, and hurricanes, even health insurance has a season to it. And this is it, open enrollment season. This is the time many companies give their employees a window to check out any changes to healthcare insurance plans, including how much more it'll cost. It's also the time Obamacare health insurance plans open for the federal government's healthcare.gov site and the 28 states using it, including Florida. Health insurance is a major expense for most people. It comes right out of your paycheck or out of your bank account each month. And along with it come direct costs out of your pocket, expenses like copays to see a doctor and deductibles. Like all insurance, for that money, you're buying to transfer some of the financial risk of paying for escalating healthcare costs to an insurance company. Now, in Florida, the biggest is Florida Blue. About 2 out of every 5 Floridians with individual health insurance get it through Florida Blue. 1 in 3 with insurance through a small employer gets it through Florida Blue, and more than half of big companies use Florida Blue here in the Sunshine State. So we invited the company's leader here in South Florida to talk with us about the Affordable Care Act, the employer-based insurance market, pricing, costs, and how all of this impacts our regional economy. Penny Schaefer is the Southeast Florida Market President for Florida Blue. Penny, welcome to the Sunshine Economy. Open enrollment season for Obamacare, for folks that get their health care through their employers. A lot of those folks are dealing with open enrollment. Broadly speaking, from Florida Blue's perspective, the largest health insurer in the state, what's the environment for this open enroll season?
So we're in the fourth year of the Affordable Care Act open enrollment, and we're only a couple of days in so far, but the response is very, very strong. I think people have begun to understand the pattern and the timing, and so Affordable Care Act enrollment's going strong. In terms of employers, we are seeing about 60% of employers have a January 1st effective date, and so you're right, it is the open enrollment season for them as well. More and more participation from employees.
And what are they finding, not only the employers and employees that are looking for health coverage, but also those that are going to the marketplace in this ACA? What are they encountering? What's the general pricing environment, the coverage environment that you're seeing?
So what you're seeing is trying to balance the affordability of the plan itself with the member cost share. That's true across the whole spectrum. And so if you think about it, we have to drive people to become better consumers of their healthcare dollar, whether it's what their employers are spending, what they're spending out of their own pockets, or what their coverage would allow, and become, you know, using the tools and becoming better users of those healthcare dollars. So a lot of education sessions, both at the consumer level as well as at the employer level, on what the benefits actually cover, which piece is actually the responsibility of the employee or the individual, and then how best to shop to make sure those dollars go as far as they can.
When you're talking about education and having users become better consumers of healthcare, is that driven by cost? In other words, is it driven by the cost share burden moving over more and more to the employee or the individual in the affordable care market?
So if we step back and look at just at the macro level, we were at about 17 to 18% of the GDP in healthcare cost before we passed the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
The good news is we have more people covered today, but they continue to use the benefits in the same way that the rest of us did before. And so now we're approaching 20 to 22% of the GDP. So we have to bend that cost curve through education, better consumerism, understanding how better to use the benefits. If we all keep using it the way we've always used it, it's unsustainable.
Yeah.
And so that education, putting tools in people's hands to make sure that they're using it better, is pretty important.
And it, driven, obviously, by that cost increase again, but is that being more heavily burdened to the individual point? So to drive that consumer dollar so that they're spending those dollars that they have to spend in healthcare in a more wise way.
Well, I think what the employers have learned is if you don't have any, I'll say it, skin in the game, you probably aren't paying quite as much attention to how you're spending the dollars.
So this is somebody who doesn't get any premium taken out of their monthly paycheck, for instance.
Probably not, yeah. Or has a very, very low deductible. And so you're really not reaching into your pocket very often. And so you begin to be desensitized to the cost of care,
yeah,
and the shopping that you kind of have to do today in order to. And you want to be aware of that before you get into a condition where you really need to use it, because the moment you get a diagnosis or something, you know, interesting, the shopping part becomes secondary. And if you haven't accustomed yourself to that notion that I need to shop a little, I need to collaborate with my doctor a little bit, there's no medical professional out there who could possibly know every insurance company, every network, every plan. And so it really is incumbent on the consumer to collaborate with the doctor on their care.
Lots of moving parts when it comes to healthcare costs, premiums, copays, deductibles, all of those kinds of things. And in fact, premiums get sliced and diced if you work for a company that provides your health insurance too. Maybe the company picks up X percentage of the employees and X percentage of a spouse or those types of things. When you look back at this continued percentage of the American economy that is consumed by healthcare spending, as you mentioned, over 20% now. What is driving that? What are the cost drivers from a large perspective, especially from the territory you focus on here in Southeast Florida?
Sure. So some of the historic drivers would be the way we pay for services. So it's a fee-for-service illness model instead of a preventive wellness model.
Every test you take, you have to pay for. Every blood test,
every code,
right,
comes with a cost.
Comes with a price tag.
The more codes you put in, the more cost you've got. So there's a certain amount of that. There's a certain amount that's defensive medicine. If you think about malpractice insurance, or those who've gone even uncovered, will likely do even more if you're uncovered from a malpractice perspective. So you look at a testing pattern or imaging pattern that's probably excessive. The lack of a ubiquitous, secure, individual health record that would allow you to avoid additional tests. So if I could append my health record, my personal health record, with the x-rays and the diagnostics and all of the things that I've been through, the example I use, usually in a group of 20 or more, somebody has torn an ACL at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And it typically happens on a Saturday. And so you end up immediately in an emergency room or urgent care, and you end up with a set of imaging. And you end up on Monday morning or Tuesday morning, either at your primary care or if you happen to have a relationship with an orthopedic. You may have those same tests repeated if you didn't have them appended to your record or you didn't think to take the imaging with you. Many times with an ACL, it's going to be surgery. And so as soon as somebody says they're going to cut open your knee, you want a second opinion. And so, you know, or your ankle or anything else. So you end up with a second opinion and you may get a third set of tests. So having a health record that is both ubiquitous and secure, you think about it, your ATM card you can use around the world. We've got to get the health record to the same place to avoid some of that excessive testing that's going on. And we also have to take personal responsibility. It's life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and we may have gotten them slightly out of balance. 60% of the disease states are driven by our personal decisions and our behaviors and habits.
Why hasn't the expanded insurance population that we've seen, driven by the Affordable Care Act, bent that cost curve? That is, we've brought more people into the tent. In fact, costs have perhaps not increased, but they've continued on the sustained trajectory.
So again, we're bringing them into the tent using the system the same way that all the rest of us have used the system. And in some cases, this is their first time in the tent. And so there's some pretty serious conditions that may not be under management that we need to get under management. So I think the longer term trend will be to bend that curve once we get people into more of a preventive mode.
What do you think that is, that long? What are we in year four, beginning year four of the ACA?
Sure. So those who started in year one, who actually enrolled,
yeah,
are probably seeing that trend change now. I'm going to tell you that I think it's probably, and this is Penny talking, it's probably a 3-year trend to really change the behavior. Year one, you go back to exactly the setting of care that you've always used. You just do it with an insurance card now. So you don't see ER visits drop in the first year. It takes some time. The newer models are integrated care that is preventive, that is looking at wellness. And so think about the newer cost models. So move away from fee for service and move into something more like a patient-centered medical home, where you've got an individual who sees a physician. That physician is incented to make sure that they see them regularly, that they improve any of their measures that are, you know, out of balance today, or protect those that are in balance, that they have their age-appropriate screenings each year. And then you bonus that doctor on the quality outcomes, the quality metrics. That's going to shift the curve completely. And the more of that work that we're doing, and the more of our Affordable Care Act participants that are in that kind of a mode, well, no, across the board, if we all were in that mode, wouldn't we really bend that cost curve?
And that requires not only a change of behavior on the part of the patient, but a big change in behavior on the part of primary care physicians and the medical industry.
Here's what I'll tell you. Every primary care physician that I've talked to that we've put this in place with has said, thank you, I'm back to practicing medicine.
Not pushing paperwork.
That's what I wanted to be doing anyway. And they take great pride. You know, we laughingly call it return to Marcus Welby, and half of your listeners don't even know who that is. But it is a bit of...
It was a TV doctor for those paying attention,
yeah,
right? Yeah.
It is a little bit about putting your health quarterback in charge. We have over 2,500 physicians in our network that are aligned that way, and they love the fact that they're actually able to practice more medicine.
Our conversation with Florida Blue's regional president, Penny Schaefer, continues next. Still to come, for the second year out of the past three, a double-digit price hike in Obamacare premiums.
What we should be seeing going into the future is this normalization to a certain extent, because the more people that we have enrolled that we've put into these more preventive integrated care models, that will start to bend that curve.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, the cost of health coverage. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. Open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act is now underway. 2017 marks the fourth year of the individual mandate requiring Americans to buy health insurance or face a fine. If you're required to be covered and don't buy a plan, you could pay almost $3,000 or 2.5% of your household income, whichever is more. Now, Florida has been big for Obamacare. Almost one out of every five Americans who got health coverage via healthcare.gov last year was a Floridian, and almost all of them got a taxpayer subsidy to buy the insurance. Of course, the future of the health insurance law may rest on the election results this week, with Donald Trump calling to repeal and replace it. Hillary Clinton says she wants to build upon it. In the meantime, next year, for now, the average monthly premium for an Obamacare plan in Florida up 19% compared to this year, $458 per person. Now, that's before taking into account any taxpayer subsidy. With the subsidy, most Floridians won't feel the direct impact of the price hikes. Florida Blue's average Obamacare premium next year is almost $100 more than the state average. Over the past 3 years of the ACA here in Florida, individual premiums overall have risen 14% each year. This is where we pick up our conversation with Penny Schaefer, the Southeast Florida Market President with Florida Blue.
You have several things that are going on. One certainly is medical costs continue to go up no matter what part of the population you're talking about. And so there's a medical trend that's in that. It is just a part, just a function of life in the medical world.
So, is it your sense, but is that being driven by usage with Obamacare, or is there something else that is driving that beyond the broader inflation rate?
So let's just start with medical trend, which is the new technologies that are available, whether you're group, individual, or otherwise. If you're in the system, there's medical trend. Pharmacy benefit, there's a lot going on in the pharmacy world and the cost of the new drugs that are coming out, which is definitely going to raise that. And then another piece of it is trying to make sure that we understand the risk pool, the pool of people that are joining. But I will tell you that what we should be seeing going into the future is this normalization to a certain extent, because the more people that we have enrolled that we've put into these more preventive integrated care models, that will start to bend that curve.
So you would anticipate in the following years maybe low double digits, high single digit year over year?
If we can get some stability into it. Now,
what stability?
We're saying that just before November the 8th, so we'll leave that alone. But I don't know what, but technically I don't know what stability will look like in terms of how the rules may change.
Right.
So if we had some stability, there are definitely things that could impact that curve.
What one of the instable features of the last several years are fewer companies offering Obamacare plans in Florida. In 2015, statewide, it was, of course, if it's a county by county plan, there were 10 companies offering Affordable Care Act plans in the state of Florida in 2015. In 2017, it'll be half that number. What's the message that's sending to the marketplace, and what's the impact for Florida Blue?
So I think a big piece of this is understanding that healthcare is local. So for Florida Blue, we're a Florida-based company. We have offered plans in all 67 counties right from the very beginning. We will continue to do that. We consider that a part of our mission as well as part of our business.
Does the company feel obligated to do that?
I think so, yes. Frankly, I do. Our mission is to improve the health of our communities. And I think you can't exit a community and then think that you're going to be able to help them with their health care. And so I think that it is an obligation, and we believe that it's an obligation. But we're committed to making sure that we do it in a way that is going to create long-term benefit as well. One could argue that if you're the only carrier in a county, that you could potentially take advantage of that from a pricing perspective or limit the number of plans. We haven't done that, and we don't plan to do that.
You have shaved the number of plans offered in county-by-county basis compared to certainly when the ACA began.
Well, what we've learned is what the community is looking for particularly. And so I wouldn't say we've limited them. I think that we've fine-tuned them is the best way to think about
it. But there's fewer Florida Blue plans in Miami-Dade County for the ACA today than there were at year one.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think in the beginning it was trying to figure out what was going to resonate with the community. And as you're able to see enrollment, you can actually say, okay, these are plans that didn't resonate with the community. There's no use in offering them. Let's eliminate them. The beautiful thing is we've introduced a plan. It was in 10 counties last year. It's in 12 counties this year. Think the major metropolitan areas called MyBlue that really has embraced this integrated care model, and it's really been able to make it more affordable. That's what we're driving for. Is affordability.
And that integrated care, is that also a feature limiting the network? So, you know, bringing the risk pool in, bringing insured people in, and then the plan that they're purchasing has a limited number of primary care physicians or specific facilities in order to help control those costs?
So what you do is find strategic partners that have pervasive number of facilities because you have to be accessible.
You want a big footprint.
You have to have a big footprint because you and I both know in Miami-Dade County, you may not leave your zip code in a month, much less, you know, in a week or a day. But the beautiful thing about finding strategic partners that will do this with you is that you're really providing care that has the opportunity to be managed over the long term. So I get to know you as a patient. I get to know your interest. I get to know the things that you resonate with. So, you know, play it forward. In the old model, if my doctor told me this year to lose 10 pounds, okay, thanks, I'll do that. And then I see him next year and the primary care says, you know, I was serious about that. I'd like you now though, it's 15 pounds. You know, you really got to get on this. When you're in this integrated care model, and the doctor says, okay, it's 10 pounds. What's going to work for you to get those 10 pounds off? Maybe it's an extension of the staff, either, you know, a dietitian, a nutritionist. You start spending some time talking about the cooking habits, the eating habits, the exercise habits. And there's follow-up 4, 5, 6 weeks out saying, by now you should have lost a couple of those pounds. Mm. How's it working? What, you know, do we need to adapt? Do we need to change the process? In our retail centers or wellness centers, we actually have worked with community partners like YMCA and others to bring in the test, if you will. So am I going to sign up for a 12-week Pilates class if I don't know what Pilates is? So YMCA comes in and says, okay, we're going to teach you a boot camp class and a Zumba class and a Pilates class and a yoga class, just one of each, so you get a, you know, the taste test. figure out what works for you, and then sign up for the 12 weeks. And so there's a whole new set of tactics and a whole new set of interventions that happen in this model.
And in that model, do I wind up getting an explanation of benefits that says Pilates with a code on it and my copay?
No, but the good news is we partner with a number of organizations, and there's a benefit that actually gives you a discount to those memberships, mm-hmm. which is kind of nice.
Yeah. So we are in year four of the Affordable Care Act. You talked a little bit about kind of how things are working. What hasn't worked? What kinds of things has Florida Blue learned about the South Florida healthcare market that just hasn't worked out and you've had to pivot and move?
That's a very good question. I can't say that there's things that haven't worked out. What we have seen, and we've been working closely with others on, is there are pockets of the community that have simply not come out and joined, if you will.
That are eligible for it.
Eligible for the tax credits. And so we've changed the outreach, let's say, to reach into those areas where both the federal government has recognized it through, you know, all of their Enroll America programs, as well as we've recognized it from looking at, you know, certain zip codes. And so for some reason, young Hispanic families have not signed up, even though the tax credits are available. So we've changed our outreach, if you will. Mm-hmm. We've worked with community partners who can help us and help them understand what's Health Insurance 101. Many of them have never purchased health insurance before. And what's Health Care Reform 101? What are you obliged to do by law? And what are the things that are available to help you from a tax credit perspective? So we've been out in the community a lot more. We run education sessions in English and Spanish and even in Creole in these wellness centers, and literally thousands of them, because that's what we've recognized, is that there are certain parts of the community that simply don't understand what's available to them.
And that the young Hispanic family from a risk pool, I would imagine, could be a very desirable insured client because they're young.
Absolutely.
And generally fewer health problems.
But the other thing that you want to do is, if you're moving to a prevention model, you want to have the intervention early. You want to set up a habit and a behavior early so that you avoid chronic illness, so you avoid things that have to be under management. Nobody, I don't think, aspires to have any of those conditions, and we aspire to help them avoid it.
Has Florida Blue's business experience in the affordable care market over the past 4 years affected any of its other health products outside of the healthcare.gov marketplace?
Another good question. I think we've learned a lot about the ability to put an integrated model together. So we have delivery of care models in the community that we work with from strategic partners, but we actually have also invested in putting our own clinic system together, mm-hmm. or health center together. Clinicenitas is the name. We've put three of those clinics in Miami-Dade County. We're adding two physician offices in Miami-Dade, three in Broward, because what we've learned is how to run that integrated care and how best to set up the benefits. So if you think about your grandfather's HMO, everybody groans and rolls their eyes and says, oh my gosh. And if you say it's got a gatekeeper, meaning that you have to get referrals,
right,
people groan and roll their eyes. I don't have time for that. But if you've got that all under one roof, so that when you walk through the door, you've got a primary care physician, a pediatrician, OBGYN, orthopedic, cardiology. When the referral is literally across the hall, not across town, and the appointments are available, and the labs can be done right there, and the diagnostic screenings, you can do a mammogram right there, and you can do the endoscopy, colonoscopy, all of those things under one roof, that becomes a more acceptable model, and you're starting to see people go, well, wait a minute, I kind of like that care. And you can extend that then as an offering into small group, middle-sized groups, because they want that same convenience. They don't want employees off the job any longer than they have to be.
Still to come as our conversation with Florida Blue's regional president, Penny Schaefer, continues, how most people get their health insurance through a job.
Well, a small group employer is not obligated to offer by law. They are moving into then the minimum essential benefits that are covered under the new plans under the Affordable Care Act.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. We're talking about the cost of health insurance on this Election Day Eve. November 1st marked the beginning of open enrollment for individual health plans under the Affordable Care Act. While the future of that law could be determined by the outcome of this week's election, it remains the law of the land for now. But the way most Floridians get health insurance is not through healthcare.gov. It's through a job. The employer-based health insurance market began as an idea during the Great Depression, caught on during World War II as companies were interested in keeping workers, and in 1943, the IRS decided the money spent on employer-based health insurance would be tax-free. It remains the most popular way to get medical coverage, and yes, monthly premiums keep going up, about 9% on average for 2017. Why? Well, some of it comes from how the Affordable Care Act is changing health insurance. We continue with Penny Schaefer, Southeast Florida Market President for Florida Blue.
Medical trend is one of the aspects of it. The other piece is that you've got companies now that are shifting to the minimum essential benefits plans that are associated with the Affordable Care Act. So while a small group employer is not obligated to offer by law, it's not a mandated coverage, they are moving into then the minimum essential benefits that are covered under the new plans under the Affordable Care Act. And that's going to raise the prices a bit.
Are they demanding those plans from carriers like Florida Blue, or is Florida Blue putting those plans into the marketplace in place of what had been previous more broadly?
So if you think about what was out there, is that plans were grandfathered in place when the law passed. So organizations held on to those grandfathered plans for as long as they made sense, as long as they were relevant, because they had a better match of benefits that were suited to maybe the specific needs of a company. The Affordable Care Act, the new plans, have a minimum essential set of benefits.
Right, the 10 specific coverage areas.
And so they're very rich and comprehensive, and may be more rich than the benefits that they had in the past. And so as they move to the newer plans, because they're more relevant to what they need for their workforce, it is driving the cost up a bit. And we've got the sort of the end of Keep Your Plan coming in the next year. So we are actively designing new products to meet the needs that fit that minimum essential benefits, but where we can try to drive down the cost if we can to help small employers. If you think about it, a small employer has never had to offer by law. They've offered it because it's a great attraction and retention mm-hmm. tool for their employees. And so, but to price it out of the marketplace, or to not pay attention to what we've learned, you know, you asked earlier, have we learned things from other plans or for the Affordable Care Act? We certainly have. And so I think we're applying a lot of those technologies, a lot of those benefit mechanisms to what we're going to be offering in small group.
Is it fair to say Florida Blue's experience in the Affordable Care Act, it clearly has to inform its broader business model, but is informing the small group market, which is very important in South Florida in an economy made up of small and medium-sized businesses, and is changing those small group plans that are not don't have to recognize the Affordable Care Act regulations, but are now coming into harmony with those regulations.
So let's be clear that the plan that we introduce does have a regulatory aspect to it. The employer is not obligated by regulation to offer anything.
Right, right.
And so, you know, the dynamic is trying to find the best blend that meets the regulatory needs, of course, of the minimum essential benefits, but delivers it in such a way that it makes it affordable for the small employer.
So on the small employer side, those plans are facing the same regulatory requirements as the ACA plans?
Well, they're slightly different, but think in the framework. There is a framework for what qualifies to register and offer a plan. It has a minimum set of essential benefits
right.
that it has to include. And so you have to, whatever you submit, whatever you put on the out into the marketplace has to meet that. So
yeah.
There is a regulatory framework that you're within. And then behind that, you try to make sure you have delivery mechanisms that keep it as affordable as possible.
Are you seeing the plans that Florida Blue is offering coming into harmony, though, because of the ACA requirements and requirements that are in the small and medium-sized group market?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And what does that look like?
Well, think about some of the care models that we've talked about. So if you think about being able to embrace in a plan the strategic partners that you can provide a cost benefit to the employer and to the employee who has a cost share that embraces some of those delivery models. So think the patient-centered medical homes, the ACOs. If you've got strategic
accountable
partners.
Accountable care organizations, ACOs. Yeah.
If you've got organizations that are and strategic partners that are working with you on that, and you can translate that into a lower cost for an employer, you still have the benefit, still has the rich benefit, you still have very good strategic partners, but you may be able then to, again, bend the cost curve a bit.
Is Florida Blue offering fewer small group plans than it was, say, prior to the Affordable Care Act coming into the marketplace?
You know, I don't honestly know the number. Again, there's fine-tuning that has gone on. As we've seen small group employers trying to make the difficult decision about whether to continue to offer, we've seen some clustering around certain industries, clustering around certain benefit structures. And so I would say probably they are fewer, but I would say it's because they're more targeted to the segments and they're more adapted to those that are still in the market and buying.
Tell me a little bit more about that clustering. What types of industries are you seeing in South Florida on the small group size, small company size? What kinds of plan features are they gravitating toward?
So if you think about, you know, you've got our nonprofit, and I know it sounds crazy to say this, but the truth of the matter is our nonprofits are not in a position where they can offer high salaries. So they do cling to the ability to provide benefits. But they have learned that while thinking as themselves as a benevolent employer paying 100% of your premium is a lovely thing to do, it doesn't drive the right behavior from a consumerism perspective. So we've seen a shift in our nonprofits are still offering, indexing very high on offering health insurance benefits, but the benefit plan designs have shifted a bit to make sure that people are really more focused on the consumerism side of it.
So the employees in these nonprofits are increasingly having to pay a portion of their paycheck to premiums.
Yeah, a little piece of their paycheck. Maybe the deductibles have changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of the benefits for an in-hospital stay have been tweaked a little bit so that you get people to urgent care versus an emergency room, some of those kinds of things that, you know, that have changed a bit. Then you go to the sort of the other end of the earning spectrum. The professional organizations, law offices, medical offices, accountants, they have offered benefits as a part of that acquisition and retention tool. They tend to go with a slightly richer benefit set as an attraction. And so you see, you know, completely different set of benefits. They want a broader network, some of those things. So depends on
which
the dynamics.
Which would add to the premium.
Of course.
Which would make the premium more expensive. And then are you seeing those companies cluster around a benefit design to have, again, the employee paycheck have some skin in the game when it comes to that insurance premium as
precisely,
well.
Yeah. Precisely. So there's more of that going on. And I think we've seen that pervasively across the board is to drive the consumerism, to be a good consumer of care. But I use a couple of examples. So you're sitting in the doctor's office and the doctor's about to write you a prescription. And you take that piece of paper and you go off to possibly the nearest pharmacy. You turn it in. You shop around for 30 minutes and get $100 worth of things you didn't know you needed and go back to the counter and they hand you the prescription and say $126. And you go, whoa, wait, I've got good insurance. And they go, that is with your good insurance. And you go, well, there's got to be a better answer.
Right.
But at this stage of the game, how do you get back in touch with the physician? How do you get that changed? Imagine you're sitting in the office and the doctor's about to write the prescription and you say, hang on just a second. Right here on my phone, I have a mobile app from my insurance carrier. I can go into that app. If you tell me what you were about to write, I can input that and I can know based on my benefits, not some average, but my benefits, whether it's on the formulary and how much it would cost me at a series of area pharmacies. And the doctor says, oh, $126. Well, wait a minute, try this. That's collaborating in your care. Mm-hmm. It's collaborating in your, you're not telling the doctor how to administer your medicine, but you are collaborating. And even if he says, okay, it is $126, but this is why I think it's worth it, at least you don't have a sticker shock when you get there. And so teaching people to use these tools, to even ask the question in the first place, but then to use these tools, is vital to some of the consumer behavior that goes on.
Still to come when our conversation with Florida Blues regional president Penny Schaefer continues, trying to know what you'll pay before you go to the doctor.
You can avoid an incredible amount of cost and still have the same result, still have a quality outcome.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. Last year, about one out of every eight working-age Americans with health insurance was paying more than 10% of their household income on insurance premiums. That's according to the Commonwealth Fund. The Kaiser Family Foundation finds for an average employee getting coverage through his or her company, 23 cents of every dollar in the paycheck goes for their share of the insurance premium. It's 34 cents in the dollar for those buying family coverage. These are averages. You can see graphs of this on our Twitter account, at WLRN. You know what the premium is going to cost, but knowing what the cost will be to use health insurance isn't so clear. Again, we return to our conversation with Penny Schaefer, Southeast Florida Market President of Florida Blue.
People are spending more of their employer and their own dollars on health care if they don't know what they're about to do, if they don't understand the shopping. You and I both know that in one setting at one end of the block, you can get an MRI for $5,000, and at the other end of the block, with equally qualified people, equally qualified and equipment, you can get it for $500. The average person doesn't even think about that, doesn't have any exposure to that. So we've put together a plan. We call it, you know before you go, but it's available to our members. Other insurance companies are doing similar things to say, for these procedures that you're about to go, know before you go what it's actually going to cost. And so it, you know, think about the average cost in this setting versus that setting, and we can tell you based on your actual benefit structure. And so you can avoid an incredible amount of cost and still have the same result, still have a quality outcome. It makes a big difference. And we're trying to start to link not only the price, but the quality. And so you start using proxies for that quality. Mm-hmm. So imagine you're about to have a knee replacement, and you're able to go in and say, based on actual claims data, the average cost of a knee replacement in this facility is this much, in this other facility is that much. Gosh, I wonder what the difference in the price is. Well, there's a frequency rate. How often does this facility do a knee replacement versus the other facility? And a complication rate. How often do we have a problem? And so, is it perfect shopping? Not yet. Is it the Consumer Report? Not quite yet. But at least there's some pretty good proxies to help people start to make those decisions.
As you know, Governor Rick Scott in Florida, former healthcare executive on the service side, a hospital operator, has talked about more healthcare transparency and has been able to pass some legislation toward healthcare price transparency, and has even talked about, if Starbucks can do it, why can't hospitals do it? Do you agree with that assessment? If Starbucks can put the price of different cups of coffee costs on the menu board, why couldn't healthcare providers do it?
Yeah. And I think the difficulty that you have with that is all a hospital or a physician's office could do is either put a retail price out there that not sure who all would pay that price.
Yeah, that's considered the cash price if you don't have any insurance.
Exactly. Right. Or they could put an average price, but it's still not going to say what your experience is.
It'd be like the
is.
Average price of a four-door car, which would include everything from a Toyota Corolla to a Maybach.
Exactly. Right. I don't even know what that is, but I bet it's expensive.
There's a comma and there's several zeros. That's all I know about it.
But the truth of the matter is, as long as you are helping to finance your care through another party, whether it's the federal government's programs or it's an individual insurer's programs, there are negotiated rates behind that based on the benefit structures, based on the economies of scale of how many patients get delivered from a volume perspective. And so anybody walking up there is going to look at that average charge and still not know what that means for them.
Right. And it may not mean anything to them. Right.
Well, it could guide how they feel about where they were and who they were with at the end of the day, because they can say, I got better than that deal, I'm staying where I am. Or I got worse than that deal, what the heck am I doing?
Some states have moved toward an all-payer claims database, which is essentially everybody who's insured, you get that explanation of benefits that includes the copay or your out-of-pocket expense and your co-insurance if there is some, and the negotiated rate and the charge rate, and that all goes into a big monster database that then can pull data from. Is Florida ready for something like that?
Well, you know, it's interesting when you think about the number of carriers that are in and out and in and out, and the negotiated rates that you... So even in this particular time frame, the rates that we provided for the Affordable Care Act plans back in April, reviewed in June, we were asked by the Office of Insurance Regulation to adjust those rates when we learned carriers were exiting. Mm-hmm. Because obviously those risk pools were going to change pretty substantially. And so I'm not sure which minute would you have posted which rate, because we've now already changed the rates within several months. So could we do it? I don't know that the dynamic is there yet and the stability is there yet for that to happen.
Healthcare insurance stops at state lines. As Florida Blue knows, it's reflected to some degree in its name.
So health insurance doesn't actually stop at the state line, just to be
clear. No,
put a fine point on that.
Right, yes, yes. I was very inarticulate in that.
That's
correct, yes. The selling of health insurance stops at the state line. Let's put it that way. Florida Blue can't sell a policy to a Georgia resident or an Alabama resident. And if Florida Blue has an affiliate in Georgia, they're not going to sell to a Florida resident.
That's absolutely true. The states have a responsibility to ensure that the carriers who are selling products to the individuals in that state have the right reserves, solvent, capable of paying claims, have the right responsibilities, have the networks to back up, you know, what they're selling in that marketplace. And so when you talk about selling across state lines, there's a level of complexity there that would fall, I guess, to the federal government to ensure that these carriers are capable of paying claims. You know, we keep a reserve that's monitored by the Office of Insurance Regulation to ensure that if something happens, think about it, we live in a coastal state prone to hurricanes for a good part of the year. And so keeping those reserves is very important. And it's different, the level of reserves maybe in Florida than what you would have in another state. So I'm not sure how the federal government would propose to monitor and measure all of that to ensure that the consumers are in good hands.
This last idea, selling health insurance across state lines, is one put forth by Donald Trump. Among his 7 points of healthcare reform on his website, number 2 reads, as long as the plan purchase complies with state requirements, any vendor ought to be able to offer insurance in any state. Still to come as we wrap up our conversation with Florida Blue's Penny Schaefer, the cost of care on the local economy.
It's not sustainable, and I think a lot of it's about our pattern of utilization.
You're listening to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks, as always, for listening. Data on the Florida economy tells us it's growing. Things are going pretty good, according to the economic statistics. After many years of stagnation, local paychecks are growing, too. But the cost of living here also continues rising. Florida's health insurance costs are part of that. They're above the national average for employer-based plans. That's the way most Floridians get their health insurance. We wrap up our conversation now with the impact of health insurance costs, and the regional economy, as we continue with Florida Blue's regional leader, Penny Schaefer. As you look at your insured population and you look at your cost drivers as well as your premium increases that have happened, what do you think the local impact is on the local economy?
I think the important thing of what we do in the local economy is what we do to surround this economy. So certainly there are a number of members in the area. We don't talk about our membership or our revenue in that way. We talk about it on a Florida basis. What I can tell you is that we've made some tremendous inroads in the uninsured, which obviously had a cost burden on the system. We've made sure that we have created jobs in the area. We've made sure that we've made care more affordable, which has a way to trickle into the entire capacity of the economy when you think about from a health perspective. It's added, obviously, the more you have insurance, the more productive that you are, because the more likely you are to be in the preventive way. We've built a number of facilities. When you think about it, we have 8 of our wellness centers across the South Florida area. We have these new clinics, you know, 3 full clinics and then the 5 physician offices, which has added to the capacity, because that's another issue that we face is we've got an aging primary care physician population. We've been able to make sure that we're using extenders, other clinicians that are able to provide services so that we increase the capacity. And so to give you an actual economic impact dollar, I can't give you the dollar amount.
Sure.
But I think from a trend perspective, we're trying to make sure that we are creating an environment that makes it possible for businesses to grow, for ourselves to grow, and for the capacity of the system to increase.
To that environment point, we live in a community that has a median income that's below the national average. Median incomes have grown in the last year after stagnation over the past decade or so. With that as a pool of economic resources, how is it that the insurance cost, and it's not just Florida Blue, but the broad insurance costs, have outstripped that kind of economic growth for many, 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 many years? And how sustainable is that?
Again, it's not sustainable. And I think a lot of it's about our pattern of utilization. So first, it's about the lifestyles that we're leading. It's about what we've chosen to do. It's about using our healthcare dollars wisely. And it comes back to the medical trends that we're going to have to pay more attention to. So it's wonderful that we have new technologies. They make a big difference in diagnostics and other things. It's wonderful that we have new drugs that are changing our lives or curing us of things. But being able to start to bend some of those trends is very important, because it's not sustainable at the current rate.
Penny Schaefer is the Southeast Florida Market President for Florida Blue. Thank you so much, Penny.
Thank you, Tom.
Florida Blue is big for small businesses in Florida. According to government filings in the fourth quarter, almost 17,000 small companies used Florida Blue as their insurance companies, insuring about 166,000 employees and dependents. And they paid almost $250 million in premiums during the fourth quarter of last year. Wanda Miles is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week.